I welcome everyone today to Sri Radha Gopinath's Sunday festival. My sincere gratitude to all of you for coming. Yesterday was Dasara, also known amongst Vaishnavas as Ram Vijayotsava, the day of Sri Ramchandra's victory over Ravana. It is a day where we contemplate as well as celebrate godliness, victory over godlessness, good over evil, self-control over lust, forgiveness over enmity, virtue over vice, devotion over envy, charity over greed. Ravana was very much the embodiment of envy, pride, and lust, as well as greed, anger, and illusion. Actually, Ravana considered himself to be a great controller. And by material standards, he was. He had the power in battle to defeat all of the demigods together, headed by Indra, single-handedly with his mighty arms and very keen intellect. Ravana, by certain considerations, was a tremendously successful person. He had performed very, very severe religious austerities, according to the scriptures. He always had the sacred fire burning wherever he was living. He was a Brahmin, son of Bishrava. Believe it or not, he gave immense charity. He was one of the greatest learned scholars of the scriptures in all the world. He really took care of all those who he was protecting. To his friends and relatives, he provided everything and great support and encouragement. To his followers, he satisfied them in every way. But to his enemies, he was death personified. Ravana was so powerful. As we have said, single-handedly, he defeated in battle all the demigods headed by Indra. Even Yamaraj went hiding underground in fear of Ravana. And Kuvera, the lord of wealth, was so utterly defeated, he had to surrender his most cherished of all possessions, his chariot Pushpaka, to be the proper of Ravana. It is a fact, when Hanumanji entered into a disguised state to bring the message of Sri Ram to Sita, he entered into Sri Lanka. That a devotee always wants to do extra service. So he was thinking that he would inspire respect all of Sri Lanka and how it's designed, where its gates are, who's there. And then for the purpose of the coming inevitable battle, he would report all this information to Ram, which would be very, very valuable information. So as he was going palace to palace, road to road, in the middle of the night, he happened to see through a window Ravana laying asleep on a bed made out of crystal in a city that was covered everywhere with solid gold. When Hanuman saw Ravana, he was thinking in his heart, what a powerful, majestic, learned hero he is. If only he used his talents in God's service instead of his own egoistic purposes, he would be such a great saint. He would be such a benefactor to the whole world. But everything was spoiled simply by his ahankar, his false ego. The center of his life was I and mine. Thus Ravana became a helpless victim of the modes of passion and ignorance. Bhagavad Gita says, Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasya ahankara vimudatma karataham iti manvete. This means that the bewildered soul thinks himself or herself to be the doer of their activities. But actually they're being carried out by nature. There is that wonderful illustration in Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as it is, where the conditioned soul is like a puppet and Maya Devi, with the three strings of goodness, passion, and ignorance, the modes of nature, is simply making every living entity dance as she wants us to dance. Ravana was thinking he was the controller and the conqueror, but in actuality, he was a slave. Slave to his own mind and senses. And therefore, when he heard about the beauty and charm of Sita, he lost control of his senses and his mind. Just hearing about her from Suparnaka, of all people, his own sister. She only told him about Sita because she wanted him to kill Ram. But she knew her brother's weakness. He had a beautiful wife of the name Mandodari and a whole collection of beautiful wives. But Bhagavad Gita tells him that passion is like fire. Can never be satisfied. The more fuel you put in the fire, the hungrier and hotter it becomes. Similarly, the process of trying to satisfy our desires through sense gratification is a futile cause, because the more we enjoy our senses with material objects, the hotter and hungrier the fire of lust will burn within our minds. Mandodari, later on, when Ravana was slain on the battlefield, she said something which was very, very relevant. She was weeping and crying over Ravana's dead body. And she said, Ravana, my dear husband, O Lord of the Rakshasas, O King of Lanka, now we are all without a king. We are all widowed. Why? You would not listen to good advice from all of your well-wishers. She told him that you gained all your powers because you performed tapasya. You became such a heroic, undefeatable king because of your ability to control your senses. But now you have been defeated, killed, and are laying in the dust as a dead corpse because you have been conquered by your senses. The same senses in which you conquered that brought you to such a high position. Now you are conquered by them and you are in the lowest position, laying dead on the hard, bare ground. Yes, Ravana was very powerful. But he was a victim. He was a puppet. He was a slave of his own egoistic pride and lust, material desires. So you know how he utilized his incredible mystic powers, which he had. Can you imagine if somebody with those powers was on earth today? He'd be the biggest feature. He'd be traveling worldwide just showing his miracles, and the whole world would probably surrender to him. Yes? They surrender to some little athletic star. Yes? Somebody can just hit a cricket ball or throw it nice, and he's everywhere in India being honored. In America, someone can throw a ball through a basket or push people down or hit balls with sticks, and they're honored and worshiped, and they're making tens and tens and millions of dollars every year. Yes? Or somebody who's a good entertainer. Hundreds and thousands of people will go to see them sing a song. Yes? So much influence. Can you imagine Ravana? If he came on stage and he just started performing, he starts changing his form into anything he wants. He starts creating all kinds of amazing illusions. Yes? So learned, so powerful, so he was really, in his own way, a very, very dignified person. But he had this problem. The false ego. So he stole Sita just close by in Nasik or Panchavati. For those of you who have been to Nasik, you know there's a place called Sita Harana, which is actually the place that Ravana took Sita away and brought her to Sri Lanka. On the way, Jatayu, although he was very old and practically an invalid, was not willing to sit there and allow Sita to be stolen. Even Sita told Jatayu that you're too old. Just tell Ram that I have been stolen. Just tell him which direction I'm going. But don't fight, you will be killed. But for Jatayu, he represents real integrity. He would rather die and suffer than stand by when injustice was taking place. How many people are like that today? Knowing he had no chance, he attacked Ravana with all his strength and with all his might. And he did a great job. But because of his old age and Ravana being at the peak of his power and strength in life, he was cut down. in a very painful condition. As we know, the story goes, ultimately, Hanuman found Sita. They built a bridge across the Indian Ocean out of stones that floated. And there was a great war. As everything was being mobilized, Ravana's brother, Vibhishan, he was a great devotee. When Hanuman met him, he rejoiced. He couldn't believe in such a demoniac city as Ravana, there's a pure devotee living who's constantly chanting the holy names of Ram and constantly performing devotional service. But Vibhishan was such a kind-hearted soul. He was truly the well-wisher of his brother. And he was telling again and again Sri Ravana that just return Sita. Otherwise, you will be crushed, you will be killed. Ram is the supreme personality of Godhead. You have no chance. Whatever powers you have is being given by him. We'll all serve you. We'll all be so cooperative with you. You'll be happy. Just cooperate with the Lord. Because Vibhishan spoke with such passion and compassion, Ravana was insulted. He could not tolerate anybody speaking of someone else above himself. Do we not all, to some extent, have this Ravana quality within us? When we're great at something, we don't like to hear somebody else who's praised at being greater than ourselves. Either we try to compromise that position by saying, oh, it just seems like that, but actually it's like this. Or else we just directly blaspheme. Or else we actually agree with the person and say, yes, yes, very great. But in our heart it's burning. Oh, I can't tolerate this person's success. So Ravana, when he was hearing Ram being praised, Vibhishana speaking against Ravana's feelings, he became outraged. He actually decided to kill his own brother for giving him good advice. But others told Ravana, you can't kill your brother, just banish him. So Ravana, in terrible anger, eyes like hot coals, he was speaking as if flames were pouring out of his mouth. He started insulting and blaspheming Vibhishan because Vibhishan was compassionately telling him good advice out of love. And he exiled his brother. If you want to live, you get out of here immediately. He took away his home, he took away his family, he took away his wealth, he took away everything. And Vibhishan just left and immediately went to Sri Ram and surrendered his life. It was a great battle. Ravana was sending his various brothers, including Kumbhakarna, who were all slain by Ram and Lakshman. And after each and every brother and each and every son was being slain, Ravana was becoming more and more furious. And ultimately, he sent his eldest son, Indrajit, who never ever lost a battle. Ravana had complete faith in Indrajit. But he was defeated and killed by Rama's younger brother, Lakshman. This was too much. When Ravana heard this, his heart was broken.
But when a kshatriya like Ravana's heart is broken, it doesn't come out with depression and tears. It comes out with wrath. He was like on fire. I will go into the battlefield today and I will destroy Ram and I will destroy Lakshman with my own arms. He boarded his chariot. It was a gigantic, fearsome, golden chariot. And he entered into the battlefield. A lot happened on that battlefield. But I'll focus on just one or two events. He saw Lakshman. And who do you think Lakshman was standing next to? Vibhishan, Ravana's brother. Oh, when Ravana saw Vibhishan on the enemy side, the same enemy that killed all of his brothers and all of his children, Ravana was furious. He took a powerful javelin and threw it right at Vibhishan to strike his heart and cause his death. But Lakshman immediately with his arrow just cut to pieces that javelin. Oh. Ravana looked at Vibhishan, his brother, with eyes like coals of hatred. Hatred, envy, and vengeance. How he was passionately longing to kill his own brother. He picked up another javelin and with all of his force threw it. It soared through the air. Lakshman shot unlimited arrows and it just absolutely counteracted the javelin. Ravana began to blaspheme Vibhishan and then Lakshman. You, Lakshman, you think you can protect my brother against my wrath? Now before I go to my brother, I will destroy you. And Lakshman began shooting many arrows at Ravana. He became really angry. And he picked up a very, very powerful, powerful javelin that had the blessings of various gods within it. And he threw that javelin with all of his force right into the chest of Lakshman, who fell to the ground unconscious. At that point, when Sri Ramchandra heard about this, he ran to the scene and held his brother in his own arms as Ravana was just shooting thousands and thousands of arrows at Ram, but he didn't care. He was concerned about his brother. But ultimately, it was just too annoying. He was trying to console Lakshman and cry over his unconscious body, and Ravana was shooting arrows, so finally Ram, in great anger, just buried Ravana with arrows. And Ravana had to retreat temporarily just to get some rest. I mean, Lord Ramchandra was weeping, holding Lakshman in his arms. My dear brother, my very life and soul, your whole life has been dedicated only to pleasing me, and now you are in this condition. How will I return to Ayodhya and face your mother Sumitra and tell her that you are dead? How will I be able to face Bharat and Shatrughna without you? Then Hanumanji brought the physician of all the monkey soldiers, the Vanaras. Do you remember his name? Shushain. And Shushain explained that there is a particular herb on a particular mountain in the Himalayas. That herb must be brought here immediately. It's urgent. If it is not brought here in a matter of minutes, he may lose his life. So Ram looked to Hanuman, bring that herb. Hanuman, the son of Bayu, leaped with such enthusiasm and devotion. For someone who has that type of devotion, Prabhupada's words are a reality. What is that? Impossible is word in fool's dictionary. He had so much faith in the power that Ram had given him, and so much absolute determination to carry out the will of the Lord, that he didn't even have the slightest doubt that he would not succeed. It is that type of faith, that type of determination and enthusiasm that attracts the Lord's empowerment into our life. Please do not think that Hanuman was just very athletic. Whatever abilities he had was the Lord's own love infusing him with that strength. So he leaped and jumped right to the Himalayas. One jump. Hare Krishna. He didn't have wings and fly. He just jumped. And then he went to that mountain. He couldn't find the herb. And there wasn't time to do all kinds of clinical research of which herb is right. It was an emergency. So Hanumanji did the needful. Prabhupada used to say, do the needful. He just lifted up the whole mountain and held it in his hand and jumped. And with one leap, came back. It was all in a matter of minutes. Can you imagine? He brought the mountain back. And Shushena extracted the proper herb. And just by the smell of that herb, Lakshman came back to consciousness. And Lord Ram was embracing him, and he was embracing Ram. And Lakshman said, oh Ram, now it is the time. Liberate the world from this Ravana who makes everyone cry. By that time, Ravana had returned with redoubled energies and enthusiasm. And there was a great battle. That was the final battle of Sri Lanka. Generally in all these battles, there was tens and thousands, hundreds and thousands of soldiers fighting in all directions. But when Ravana and Ram stood before each other, everyone stood and watched. Indra sent his chariot with his charioteer Matali. And when Ravana saw that Ram was taking the support of his most formidable enemy, Indra, that only further to inflame his anger. They were shooting arrows, throwing bludgeons and axes and lances and javelins and clubs and stones. It is said that at certain times their fighting had become just single-handedly. They were creating by their mystic power so many various types of weapons, and they were all just colliding against each other in the sky, that nobody could even see the sun. The sky was literally dark because of the mass quantity of weapons they were hurling upon each other. At times, it just looked like Ram was completely obscured by a cloud of weapons, and then he emerged like the sun from behind a dark cloud. And at other times, the same thing would take place with Ravana. Their charioteers were taking their horses and aiming them at each other, and the chariots were just crashing each other. And neither one could defeat the other. It was the battle of all battles. And ultimately, Ravana, who was a real hero in the sense of power and valor, he was becoming more and more bloodthirsty with every minute of this battle. And Ram saw this. So with special, cherished arrow of his, he cut off Ravana's head. But to Ram's amazement and everybody's amazement, the head just grew, a new head just grew right back. And then he cut off another head and another head grew back. And he cut off another head and another head grew back. Pretty soon, there was 101 heads laying on the ground in blood, and an identical head to all those 101 heads was still on his head. Couldn't be destroyed. A comparison can be made that this egoistic passion or kama within our heart is like Ravana. Sita is the goddess of the earth. She was born of the earth. She is the goddess of fortune. All that exists is the property and the blessing of Sita. It is all meant to be used in harmony with her desire, the service of Lord Ram. When we try to take the energy of Sita and keep it for our own selfish personal pleasure, then we are taking the role of Ravana and can never be satisfied. And even when we try again and again to try to conquer this impulse within us, it seems that again and again, the head of lust emerges. Even when we think we've conquered, again it emerges. Vibhishan told Ram that my brother, the only way he could be killed is you have to pierce his heart. He has nectar in his heart. You have to pierce his heart and drink all that nectar with your arrow. Dry it up. There's no other way of killing him. Otherwise, his supernatural powers are undefeatable. So as the battle proceeded, Sri Ram took his most special arrow. This was an arrow that was given to him by a great Vaishnav sage named Agastya Muni. Just outside of Nasik is Agastya Muni's ashram. Agastya Muni gave Ram an ashtra, an arrow that was given by Lord Brahma to the demigods to defend their kingdoms. It is an infallible weapon that must defeat its opposition. Now, the Supreme Personality of Godhead does not need the help of others to fulfill his purpose.
But when the Lord comes to the world, in certain ways playing the role of a human being, he wants to show by his example. And what is one of the very instructive examples of this lesson? How very important it is to receive the blessings of great souls. The blessings of great souls that are offered with heartfelt affection can help us overcome all of our inner enemies. Can help us to attain the ultimate victory of life. So Ram took the help of the blessings of Agastya Muni in the form of this arrow. And he shot that arrow. He pulled it back on his golden bow all the way back to his ear. And he aimed right to Ravana's heart. And when he released it, it entered the sky. It lit up all directions. Everything stopped. Everyone was motionless in the 14 worlds as they just watched this infallible, effulgent arrow just shooting like a meteor through the sky. Even Ravana was so abashed by seeing what was coming toward him, all he could do was look. It hit him right in the heart, pierced his chest, went right into his heart, and dried up the nectar of his very life force. And Ravana fell from his chariot onto the hard, bare, cold ground with his arms in array, spread out, although decorated with beautiful ornaments, and his head and his beautiful crown just laid on the ground. At that time, Lakshman and all the monkey soldiers headed by Hanuman and Sugriva, they were dancing. They were in so much joy. Now Sita will be returned to Ram, and Ravana and his whole menacing dynasty of demons is gone. And they were dancing and singing. Can you imagine that kirtan? After days and days of battle, when Ravana fell down, Hanumanji and all of his associates, oh, how they were chanting Ram's name and dancing in ecstasy. And meanwhile, the associates of Ravana were finished. They lost their leader. They lost all their hope. Now please listen carefully. Ram Vijayotsava is the day that Ram defeats Ravana. And Sita is returned to Sri Ramchandra. The day of victory over, of good over bad. Vibhishan, who was Ravana's younger brother, he came into the battlefield. He was standing there. When he saw his older brother laying there dead, he was beside himself with grief. Uncontrollably sobbing tears, he was wailing that his brother was dead. He actually loved Ravana. Ravana hated him. Ravana exiled him, blasphemed him, took everything away from him, all his wealth, all his prestige, his position, everything. And then on several occasions, Ravana intently tried to kill Vibhishana, to murder his own brother. Lakshman saved him, but Vibhishana saw it all. But he was so forgiving.
He cried when his brother died. He kneeled at his brother's dead corpse and began to pour out the feelings of his heart. That my brother Ravana, you were the master of military arts. There was no one in the universe that could compete with you. You were a master at performing religious austerities, penances, and meditation. You were a master in every type of science. You were a master of all the Vedic scriptures. And now, look at you, laying on the hard, cold ground as a dead corpse. My dear brother, I tried to help you. I gave you the best possible advice. But because your brain was maddened with lust and pride, you could not hear a word I said. Because you were a victim, defeated by lust and pride, your maddened brain impelled you to engage in grievous activities. And now look at you, such a great person, who used to sleep in beds made out of swan's feathers, stemless flowers, and the purest silk. Your last bed is on the hard, bare earth. You were like the sun, the lord of the daytime, who has fallen headlong onto the ground. You were like the full moon, the queen of the night, who is now submerged in utter darkness. You are like the lord of fire, who has been utterly extinguished by a rain cloud. You are the very embodiment of enthusiasm and determination, and now you are lifeless and idle. You are like the greatest, biggest tree, but you have been cut down by the whirlwind of Lord Sri Ramchandra. You are like the most powerful male elephant, but you have been defeated by the lion-like Sri Ram. You are like a blazing fire, but you have been extinguished by the rain cloud of Ram's prowess. You were like a maddened bull, but you have been killed by the tiger of Sri Ram's strength. Now look, all of your incredible, wonderful, good qualities have simply been defeated by your own envy. Vibhishan, he loved his brother. He was completely forgiving of his brother. He was crying for his brother. Ultimately, Ram came to console him. Ram said, actually, there's nothing to grieve. Your brother, Ravana, is glorious. He died like a true Kshatriya, a warrior. He died in the battlefield fighting for what he felt was right. Rivo. And because I represent the highest Dharma, and he is killed on a battlefield fight, a battlefield of religious conflict.
He has been killed by my arrows. He will achieve the most auspicious destination. The soul is eternal. The soul cannot be killed by any weapon. It cannot be moistened by water. It cannot be burned by fire. The soul is indestructible. Please be at peace. And then Vibhishan spoke. He said that I'm the only survivor in the whole family. All brothers, all children are dead. There's no one except me that could perform the last rites for Ravana. And Sri Ramchandra told him, Vibhishan, he's your brother. And because you are such a dear friend to me, I consider Ravana to be as dear to me as my own brother. All the wrath, envy, and rage that he had for you is now gone. Just forgive him. And with love and prayer, perform his last rites. Vibhishan was so very, very happy to receive those instructions. After Mandodari and the other queens grieved over the loss of their husband, Vibhishan, with the blessings of Lord Ram, performed the last rites for Ravana, the king of the demons and Rakshasas. So let us try to understand the incredible consciousness of Vibhishan. How forgiving, how tolerant, how loving of a person he was. Vibhishan was a self-realized soul. He knew that the soul of every living being is essentially good. It is said that we should hate the disease, but never should we hate one who is diseased. Rather, we should feel compassion for the diseased. Or it is said, hate the sin, but do not feel any envy toward the sinner. Yes, Vibhishan all along saw the spark of good within Ravana's heart. And even though he saw his brother performing so many criminal activities to the extent of stealing the consort of Vibhishan's own worshipable lord, Vibhishan was always compassionately preaching to him, trying to educate him, trying to lead him in the right direction out of love. And what did he get in return for that love? He got Ravana's wrath and anger. Ravana had more physical strength than Vibhishan. He was the king with all armies. Vibhishan was helpless. But just like Prahlad gave good instruction to Hiranyakashipu, but because of Hiranyakashipu's false ego and material attachments, he could not hear. In the same way, Vibhishan was giving all good instructions to his brother, even at the risk of his own life. He didn't just sit back and just pray, "Oh Ram, save Ravana." No, he went forward in the spirit of Prahlad and preached to his brother, "Don't you know what you're doing? You are entering into the jaws of death. Stop your envious, proud, and sinful ways. We're all here to help you, to support you." That was the spirit of Vibhishan. He spoke to Ravana out of pure, unalloyed love. Now, Krishna says in Gita, we should not be attached to the results of our activities. And this is an example. Sometimes we're good to a person and that person turns out to be a cruel enemy to us for no reason that we can discover with our own intelligence. But Vibhishan was always Ravana's well-wisher. Ravana publicly blasphemed him and disgraced him in front of all relatives and all friends. Threatened to kill him. Exiled him. Kicked him out like a piece of rubbish from the kingdom and took everything he owned away from him. And then on several occasions, with anger and envy and hatred in his burning eyes, he tried to murder Vibhishan directly. Now, how many of you have ever been treated like that by anybody? Please raise your hand if you have. Total injustice, criminal activities, hatred, vengeance. And all he did was try to help out of love. But still, Vibhishan was a loving well-wisher of Ravana. Even when he took Ram's side in the battle, he was doing it for the best interest of his brother. He didn't want that sinful karma upon him. This is forgiveness. In Sanskrit, kshama. Forgiveness is one of the most essential qualities for one who wants to advance in spiritual life. When we forgive someone of their injustices against us, what we do is we liberate ourselves from the poison of that negativity that is within our own heart. It is a fact that when we have negative ill feelings toward anyone, it's like a fire. That spirit of vengeance, envy, or dislike, when it burns in our heart, it burns away our spiritual assets and all of our good qualities. To feel a vengeful mood toward anyone is like keeping the deadliest poison within our heart, and it spreads like a disease. And all that's required to be liberated of that poison is the power to forgive. If you are a victim of someone else's misbehavior to you, whether they're right or whether they're wrong, whether it's justified or unjustified, that's not so important. That's not the way Vaishnavas think. Mercy is not a matter of what is justice and what is not justice. That's another lower level that has to be dealt with by governments and so forth. But for a devotee, if we're a victim, as long as we're not able to forgive that person or those persons, we remain victims. Birth after birth after birth. The example is given. If someone offends you and you want to get back at them and you pick up a burning hot coal in your hand to throw it at him, and you hold it, and you hold it, and you hold it, what happens? You get burnt. Adio.
We have to drop that coal.
Tate nukampam susamikshamano bunjana evatmakritam vibhagam.
According to Srimad Bhagavatam, that is the only means we can get the mercy of the Lord in its fullness.
Even when difficult injustices come upon us in suffering situations, if we can fold our palms with grateful hands and say, "My Lord, I deserve worse. Out of your kindness, out of your mercy, I'm getting purified by this situation."
That grateful heart alone is eligible for liberation. This is a universal principle of all spiritual paths. It is foundational in the teachings of Lord Jesus, of the Christian Bible.
He said that if you do not forgive another person for what they have done against you,
you will not be forgiven by God for the things that you have done in the present and the past. You must forgive to be forgiven.
Saint Peter asked Jesus that if a person offends us, disgraces us 7 times, should we still forgive them?
And his reply is, you should forgive him 70 times 7 times.
He said, it is said that an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say that anybody can be kind to a friend. That doesn't take a great person. A great person is a person who can love their enemy.
If you're not able to love your enemy, if you only love your friends, then what makes you any different than the tax collector?
It is a principle. The principle of love is to forgive.
Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains how this forgiveness is manifested in the heart of a Vaishnav. Are all of you still awake? Then I will continue.
Thakur Bhaktivinoda, he explains that bhakti is the tender affection of the heart toward Krishna.
Bhakti means devotion.
And daya, which is compassion, is that same tender affection of the heart when it is directed toward Krishna's parts and parcels, the living entities. When the tender affection of our heart is directed toward Krishna, that is bhakti, and when it is directed toward the living entities or other people, that is daya or compassion. Now, part and parcel of bhakti is dainya, which is humility. A humble devotee thinks, I'm the eternal servant of the Lord. I'm the most fallen.
Tatenukampam susamikshamano.
I deserve the worst. Whatever good I have, I just thank God a million times I don't deserve it. And whatever bad I get, I thank God a million times also, because it's helping me. It's giving me the chance to come closer to Him.
Vipada shantuta shashvat tatra tatra jagat guru bhavato darshanam yatsyat apunar bhavadarshanat.
Queen Kunti has prayed, let calamities come again and again and again, Krishna. Let those calamities keep coming, because in the face of these calamities, I have nowhere to go except to turn to you. And in seeing you, I never have to see birth or death. This is dainya. This is humility. A humble devotee does not think that I am on the platform to judge anybody. Who am I to judge another? I deserve so much worse. I'm simply the servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord. When that dainya is mixed with daya, or compassion, concern for the welfare of others, when the two mingle, humility and compassion, then what emerges is kshama, or forgiveness. Therefore, forgiveness is the inseparable nature of bhakti. And how we please Krishna is very much based on our willingness and our endeavor to forgive others for their offenses. Vibhishan very much personified this principle. He loved Ravana. The person who hated him, took everything away and tried to murder him, he performed his last rites praying and praying and praying to Ram to give him liberation. Prahlad had that same forgiveness toward Hiranyakashipu. Ambarish Maharaj had that same spirit of forgiveness toward Durvasa Muni, who blasphemed him and tried to kill him. Ambarish was waiting a full year fasting, drinking only a little water, just praying for the welfare of his assassin. Parikshit Maharaj was the loving well-wisher toward Sami Grishi and his son Sringi, who cursed him to die in 7 days. He saw something positive in it. Yes, let me take this last 7 days and do something wonderful with it. This is the mercy of the Lord. As Prabhupada would say, do not become disturbed with the instrument of your own karma. Whatever comes upon us, whatever bad that comes upon us or suffering, for a devotee, it's just Krishna trying to purify us of our pure previous karma. And we have seen devotees who follow in the footsteps of these great personalities. It happens to be the continuous message throughout our scriptures. Practically every great person we read about was a person who was forgiving their enemies. Yes? Haridas Thakur. He was beaten through 22 marketplaces by brutal executioners. He was sentenced to die by the Qazi for no other reason but just trying to help others. And as he was being beaten and beaten and beaten, the Lord wanted to come and punish them, but he couldn't, because Thakur Haridas was praying, please forgive them. Give them your mercy. Give them love of God. Let them go back to your eternal abode. They wanted the worst for Haridas. They were blaspheming him in public. They were trying to murder him, torturing him. And he was praying that they get the ultimate benediction. My Lord, forgive them and give them your love. That is a well-wisher. When Prabhupada would sign his letters, you are ever a well-wisher, that's what he's talking about. One who's willing to sacrifice so much for your welfare unconditionally. Yes, Vishnu's chakra was frozen by the prayers of Haridas.
All the Lord could do was give liberation to his executioners because of his prayers. All Narsingadev could do was give liberation to Hiranyakashipu. And all Ram could do was give liberation and accept Ravana as his own brother because of the love of Vibhishan. Prabhupada says one's greatness must be understood. One's greatness has to be estimated by one's ability to tolerate difficult circumstances. Confrontational circumstances. So Ram Vijayotsava, we should understand from so many points of view the depth of what this day represents. When Jesus was on the cross, they were crucifying him. He prayed, "Father, forgive them. They know not what they do." And Prabhupada would cite this instance many times, saying, "This is Vaishnav. This is what Vaishnavas are about." So how petty and ridiculous and insane it is to hold grudges and feel anger and envy toward other devotees for some slight injustice that may have happened, you know, today, yesterday, or years ago. To err is human, to forgive is divine. We should understand that Krishna sends people to offend us, to do injustices to us, and to make us really sad and miserable. Harivo. Just to give us a chance to become Vaishnavas. Are we going to take the opportunity, or are we going to waste it and take birth after birth after birth after birth because we're not willing to let go of this anger, this envy, this vengeance? It's insane. What for? It's not worth anything. But it's so difficult. We see so often there's conflict between religious people of different religions. Why? They just don't get the point, what their religion is about. Whether you're a Christian or a Muslim or a Hindu or a Hare Krishna or a Vaishnava or a Jain or a Zoroastrian or a Buddhist, one thing that's common in every one of these paths is you have to be self-controlled, you have to be tolerant, and you have to be forgiving. You have to be an instrument of God's love. But the false ego perverts everything. And we even learn to hate, harbor hate, and teach other people to hate in the name of God. What does that mean? We're just puppets of our own false egos. Puppets of the illusory energy. Ignorance. And even amongst friends and God brothers and God sisters and fellow devotees of our own spiritual path. Srila Prabhupada explained, Maya cannot hurt us from without. The more she attacks us without, if we're strong within, the more we'll shine. Yes? When you want to purify gold, you put it in fire. The longer you keep gold in fire, the cleaner and more it shines. Is that correct, Shamsundar Prabhu? At least that's what Prabhupada said. So when fire comes from without, if we're united within,
that fire will only make us stronger because we'll have to go deeper and deeper and deeper in surrendering and take shelter of the Lord for help. Prabhupada said, Maya, material energy, cannot break us from without, but she can break us to pieces from within. When we cannot forgive each other, when we offend each other, because without forgiveness, to remain in Vaishnav society, you'll go insane. You have to forgive. Because even people with good intentions, we all have our conditionings. We all have habits from the past. Sometimes we're just going to do things that aren't right. We should try our very level best not to, but we can't expect everyone to be like that. Prabhupada saw the little tiny bit of spark in a person's heart. Even if they were addicted to every sinful activity and they were atheists, he saw that spark, focused on that spark, and fanned that spark to make it blaze. But Prabhupada said, seeing faults in another devotee is like criticizing the moon, the full moon, which is giving luminous light to the whole universe, because it has spots on it. What is that mentality? So why should we keep this poison within our hearts, which just eats us away and spoils our devotional character? And most of all, that poison displeases Krishna so very much. Sam Siddhir Hari Toshanam. Our only purpose in life is to please Krishna. And he has shown through countless stories in the holy scriptures what great souls do to please him. And one of the prominent features is willingness to take a humble position and forgive others. If we're serious about the substance of bhakti, we have no alternative. We must strive in this virtue. It may be difficult. It may take years to get that burning poison out of our hearts, but we should pray for it. We should not serve it. We should pray to get rid of it. We should perform our sadhana to get rid of it. And we should never act under its dictations. In this way, we have to sincerely take shelter of the holy name. Yes, Ravana ultimately went back to Godhead. And Vibhishan is glorified forever for his incredible virtues. This is bhakti. And this is why Vibhishan was so very, very dear to Lord Ramchandra. Vibhishan was victorious. He was victorious over Ravana. Why? Because he did not allow Ravana, with all of his envy, hatred, anger, lust, pride, and greed, he did not allow Ravana to pollute his own consciousness. That is victory. Victory doesn't mean getting a trophy and winning a championship. Real victory is to conquer these vices within our heart through the sincere and selfless chanting of God's names and through our life.
Yes, Vibhishan was victorious. There was nothing Ravana could do to him that could change his heart from being his well-wisher. And that was his victory. Konteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashyati. Krishna tells in Gita that my devotee will never perish. But what does it mean to be a devotee? It doesn't mean just shaving our heads and putting on some beads or wearing a sari. Those are different forms that may help us in our devotional life. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, even servants of Kali dress like this sometimes. Prabhupada said, Krishna consciousness is not a change of dress or hairstyle. Krishna consciousness is a change of heart, a transformation of heart. It is something with substance. As we say so many times, Krishna sees the purpose in which everything is offered to him. In the Bible, Jesus said, if you're going to make an offering on the altar of the Lord and you're feeling enmity toward someone, put the offering down, forgive that person, and then come, and the Lord will accept your offering. That is a Vaishnava principle. That is Prahlad, that is Thakur Haridas, that is Parikshit, that is Yudhisthira, that is Ambarish, that is Srila Prabhupada, that is all the great acharyas. They have that quality. Everyone's well-wisher. And that's what we should strive for. That is substance. That's what we're praying for. Trinadapi suniche na taror iva sahishnuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahadi. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur explained that this verse is the gateway into the higher realizations of Krishna's Leela. If we don't pass through this gateway, Krishna's Leela will only remain theoretical and insubstantial in our lives. We must become humble like the grass, tolerant like tree. And when Prabhupada describes tolerance, in most cases, he defines tolerance as forgiveness. Bearing difficulties and forgiving. Offering all respect to others and expecting none in return. If we really strive to cultivate these qualities by our acts, by our words, by our prayers, and by our motivation for chanting, then yes, Krishna will be pleased. And then the ultimate benediction will come upon us. Well, we will feel so much attracted to Krishna who has descended in his name that we will chant the names constantly. Samsadhir Hari Toshanam. The goal of life is to please Krishna. This is what Krishna wants. If people try to correct us, we should stand corrected. We shouldn't defend in a sense of false honor. Jiva Goswami was honestly and earnestly trying to protect Rupa Goswami's name, and Rupa Goswami said, you have argued with Balabhabhat because of your pride. Get out of Vrindavan. A person with pride has no right to be in Vrindavan. Out. Are we qualified to go and live in Vrindavan? Shouldn't take it cheaply. Living in Vrindavan doesn't mean just resting your old or a young body on the ground. Living in Vrindavan means being in a consciousness. And wherever you're in that consciousness, that is actually what living in Vrindavan is about. We want to live in Vrindavan, in the Vrindavan spirit. Trinadapi sunichena taror ivasihishna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. We must cultivate this consciousness. Cultivate this substance. And in this way, when devotees come together in that spirit of cooperative unity, then what happens? Krishna's pleased. And he descends and infuses our hearts with his inconceivable mercy as we chant his names. Not only do we become purified, but we have the power to purify so many others. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said in Chaitanya Bhagavat, when my devotees raise their arms high into the air and chant, they are sending the all-purifying, merciful vibration of the holy names like antennas through the hand. He didn't say antennas, but same principle. We're sending that energy throughout the universe. That is why we raise our arms. Draupadi raised her arms in helplessness, crying out for Krishna. That is one reason. Another is so our bodies are like antennas, and when we chant the holy name, that vibration just fills the universe and purifies everyone with the Lord's mercy. So let us strive for these qualities and raise our arms and loudly chant the holy name. Chanakya Pandit has said that the beauty of a cuckoo bird is the sweetness of its song. The beauty of a woman is in her chastity. Even a person who has an ugly body is seen to be beautiful if they are a learned scholar. And the beauty of a saintly person is their forgiveness. Prabhupada quoted this on many occasions. Please forgive me for speaking so long. Thank you very, very much. Srila Prabhupada ki. And now we would like to ask His Grace Shyamasundar Prabhu to speak. We know that Shyamasundar Prabhu is directly and personally an object of Prabhupada's inconceivable mercy. And one thing I have personally noted in Shyamasundar Prabhu's character, after spending many intimate hours and days and months with him, is he has no propensity to find any faults with anyone. He's been blessed by Prabhupada with this very, very special and rare quality of just wanting to appreciate and be the well-wisher of every living entity. In 1970, Shyamasundar Prabhu came to Bombay with Srila Prabhupada and just a few other devotees. And Shyamasundar Prabhu actually was the one that organized the first major program for Prabhupada to lecture in all the world at the Cross Maidan in downtown Bombay, 1971, where 20 to 30,000 people of Bombay were coming to hear Srila Prabhupada every morning and evening. And they had nothing. They came here with absolutely nothing. They didn't even know anyone except one or two people. To pull off such a Maber extravaganza, just such enthusiasm, such faith. Prabhupada said, impossible is word in fool's dictionary. He believes in this. So don't be skeptical when Shamsundar Prabhu speaks. Because now he wants to perform, he wants to organize a second Cross Maidan Pandal program. And his heart is really, really intent on it. And he wants to share with us his enthusiasm today. Shamsundar Prabhu ki jai.
Can everyone see the formal official announcement? This will be Radhanath so aptly said. In 1971, Srila Prabhupada conducted the very first Cross Maidan Festival here in Bombay. And I think it still remains probably the largest event that Srila Prabhupada ever spoke to, a public event in history. With this event, we had only been in India, a handful of us, 8, 10 boys and girls, for a few months. Nobody had heard of Prabhupada. So we thought to give him a large stage, a large audience, so he could reach out to all of India. And somehow or other, by Krishna's grace, we were able, though we didn't know anyone ourselves, we didn't have one Indian devotee, we were all strangers here. We had this huge idea, well, let's put together a festival in the center of Bombay. Tens of thousands of people can come every day and hear Srila Prabhupada talk and get the real thing from their greatest hero, Srila Prabhupada. And this happened. Of all the events that Srila Prabhupada did before and after over the years, he remembered that Cross Maidan Festival as being one of his proudest triumphs. So, many years have passed now, 33 years. Srila Prabhupada, his institution, ISKCON, is now widely known all over India. But the person, Srila Prabhupada, his personality, who he was, the fact that he was the greatest spiritual hero of India, of all of them, in the entire modern age, has been largely forgotten to our deep regret. But it's within our hands to reawaken this understanding in the hearts and the minds, not only of the people of your great city, Mumbai, but for all of India to see again that Srila Prabhupada is still alive and with us in the personalities of his great disciples. So we've gone to the extent of leasing again the Cross Maidan grounds, Goan football field adjacent to it, and a good part of the Azad Maidan adjacent to it, 7.5 acres. We've got them now. But it's still a blank slate. We haven't done anything else. We have no money. There's no organization in place to make this happen. We have less than 4 months to make it happen. But it will happen. It will happen. There's no doubt it will happen. I mean, we were only 8 people. Now we are thousands. So you have the dates. Some of the themes that have been suggested are Prabhupada's children, 33 years later. This is Prabhupada's 108th birth year. So we can celebrate that, Prabhupada's 108th. The theme and the overall emphasis on this festival is to glorify the person, Srila Prabhupada, to demonstrate graphically through the teachings and the lectures by his advanced devotees that his words live. This is your chance to see all the great souls of Krishna consciousness movement, like Radhanath Goswami and his godbrothers. Giriraj will come. Giriraj has promised to come. Indra Dumna, Mukunda Maharaj, Lokanath, Gopal Krishna, all of these great souls will descend upon your town, and each night we will give this wonderful Pandal program in the Cross Maidan again. And this is still Prabhupada speaking. The people will see that. They'll say, this is different than what Vivekananda did, or Ramakrishna did, or all of these other so-called great representatives of Indian sainthood. People have forgotten that Srila Prabhupada has really done it, that his movement and his words live all over the world. So the number one goal will be to reestablish or reconfirm Prabhupada's... Where's the eraser? Number one goal, reestablish Srila Prabhupada's dominance. And to do that, we have the Pandal itself, the huge tent. And with massive publicity and advertising, place for 10,000 people to sit comfortably or more if it seems that more people will come. This is the number one goal. As a secondary goal, we, especially after seeing that wonderful school yesterday and realizing how much in the hands of the future that the youth must be attracted to Krishna consciousness, and this is seeing all the young people coming into Chaupati Center here especially has brought this idea into mind that we should use this chance, this opportunity with the festival to approach the youth of Bombay. So that's our second goal or purpose, is the youth. To approach the youth of Bombay. Now, to do this, we've come up with a pretty special idea. I think everyone's going to love this one. All over the world, wherever Krishna consciousness is well established, there are these young groups of, I guess you have to say, rock and roll Krishnas. They have bands. They have wonderful kirtan, electronic kirtan groups in Kazakhstan, in New York, in Los Angeles, and Australia, all these different places all over the world. We want to bring them all here and have a concert venue also. Another part of the Pandal, the overall grounds, will have a huge concert hall where we will have daily rock and roll Krishna, heavy metal Krishna. I stop at rap music. No rap music, but modern music to attract the young people of Bombay to come and see what this is. So that will be the concerts. The third thing that we'd like to achieve with this festival, it became very apparent last March in Mayapur when the deity installation ceremony was held. Many of you probably came to that. No one had ever seen such a thing or established experienced such a thing when thousands of devotees from all over the world came together in one grounds, in one venue, in one with one purpose. It was just like walking the streets of Vaikuntha to see this. It became absolutely apparent to everyone what a wonderful first-time thing this was. We used to have these events in the old hippie days called be-ins, human be-ins. That meant that just a happening where everyone would just come to one place, like Golden Gate Park or Central Park in New York. And just the fact that so many thousands of people came from all over the world into one place made something special happen. So this will be a convention of worldwide global devotees as well. Many older devotees who you've never met before, you've heard about, they'll be coming. Many parts of the world, we're trying to get everyone to come from South America, from Australia, from Europe, from Africa, from Asia, all parts, to come and enjoy this festival with us. So that would be, I don't know how to put it into short words, maybe we just call it a BN. And that will use our main grounds to house it. We've got plans to rent a couple of hotels, have a fleet of buses, cars to transport devotees around. We've met with the leaders at Juhu, and they've joined with us 100% in this effort, at least on the theoretical level. So now it just remains for us to do this. Other items that will be featured at the festival, I mean, these are just all ideas still, is that we'd like to establish some sort of a giant display area. However much time and however much money we have to do this, waits to be seen, but we'll call it the Vedic Global Village, where people can come from all parts of India, Bombay especially, to see Krishna consciousness activities demonstrated visually from all parts of the world. They'll see temples in Russia. They'll meet Chinese devotees from China. They'll meet devotees from Japan. They'll meet black African devotees. They'll meet people from South America. They'll see that Krishna consciousness is doing something no one else has ever done. That Srila Prabhupada is, in fact, India's greatest spiritual hero. We can prove this graphically to the people of your city. Book stalls. We want to invite the best drama groups from all parts of the world to conduct dramas that are very effective in preaching Krishna consciousness. So the budget, everything, I guess, being Bombay people, you realize and know this better than anyone. Everything depends on how much money you have. If we had all the money we needed right now, we could get started and do this thing very quickly. If we only have a little money, it'll be a small event. We'll still have something. At least we'll be able to go down and listen to Radhanath and a few others preach. But we have this opportunity to do something very big. The budget that we've been looking at is something like $100 lakhs. It's nothing. That's 101 lakh donations. It's 1,000,010 rupee donations, but or it's 25 lakh donations, or it's only 4 25,000 lakh donations, 25 lakh donations. It's not a lot of money. Wherever Krishna is, success and money are certain to follow. But besides the money, we need manpower, womanpower. We need devotees to help in all this. We need ideas. Later on, we'll get into advertising and publicity. And in February, we'll need many hands to actually conduct physically the whole event. So I'm simply calling upon everyone to think about this festival, that it's coming up, and what you can do personally to contribute toward making it a success for Srila Prabhupada, whether it's financial or with your ideas or with your anyone who's got a good idea or a good offering who wants to volunteer to do something to make this festival work, they should, according to Radha Krishna, they should approach their counselors. Is that correct, Radhanath? Is that they should approach their counselors to get volunteer their advice or time or whatever? Is that the procedure here? We don't have a bureaucracy yet in place or a system yet in place for all of this, but that will grow also. First, we need to see your enthusiasm and your desire to make this happen. We know that Srila Prabhupada would be more pleased than almost any other single thing I can think of to have such an event. This would please Prabhupada so much to allow the people of Bombay to see his children speaking in the same high level and conducting their lives with the same purity and dedication of purpose that he gave us as his example, personal example. I'm always talking in my to people and in my lectures and so on about taking risks for Krishna, the adventure of doing something very big for Krishna. This is a wonderful concept, and it's a wonderful feeling that when you do this, you begin to sense Krishna's presence more and more. The more you risk and the more you give to Krishna in this way to do something big for him, the more pleased Krishna is to come and help you personally. And you'll experience this. We'll all experience this together as a group putting on this event. We'll have a blast. There'll be so much fun. There won't be a dull moment. There won't be a moment when everyone is not just laughing with hilarity as this thing takes place and we see how Krishna is helping us do it. So, this is going to be a mood, a special mood, this Prabhupada Festival 2005. There it is, and it's all in your hands now. I just leave it with you. Let's see what happens. Does anybody have any questions about this? Never mind. Over the next few days, everything will become more and more clear, and we'll disseminate information as it happens. First thing is the money. We need to raise the money. So think about ways that you can help start raising money. Once we have the money, everything can happen very nicely. Our expenditures are for the actual pandal itself, physical structure of the pandal. We have a big expense for prasadam distribution. We want to distribute prasadam to thousands and tens of thousands of people a day all over the pandal program area. Very expensive thing. Other expenses, we need to house some devotees and transport devotees. These are expenses. Publicity, advertising is a very big expense. So all of these totals come to ideally about 100 lakhs. Start thinking about how we can get it. Haribol. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.